Okay, welcome everybody. Thank you all for joining. It's really an honor to be able to speak to everybody, really all around the world. I see people here from locally Yad Binyamin. I see people from Cincinnati, where I grew up, family, friends. So it's really an honor to speak to all of you. Thank you. Very humbling too. I'd like to dedicate this year. Let's take a step back. When I was thinking about putting together this year, ideas just sort of started coming together. I don't do this all the time. Unfortunately, I don't have time to put together shiurim regularly. But things just started coming together, and I realized that with Esar B'Teves coming up, that it really is an opportunity to share some words of Torah to kind of get us in the right frame of mind going into to the fast this coming Friday. With that said, I also realize that coming up in a couple of weeks, later this month, is my brother's Yahrzeit, Yonah Gavriel ben Reb Zisha Elchanan. So the learning this year should be an Aliyah and Neshama. And Ruchi Aluf also mentioned to me that her father's Yahrzeit is actually on Asar B'Teves, Menachem ben Yehuda. And so the learning should also be an Aliyah and Neshama for him as well. I also want to just take this opportunity to thank you. I see some of your names here, people that encourage me to continue to share, and even when I don't necessarily have the time, but I do appreciate that feedback, and it does create opportunities like this where I push myself to give this year, even though it's not always so easy or comfortable to get up in front of people. Although I guess when you're speaking to a screen, it's not as hard as when you have a room full of people. Okay, maybe I should go like this so I could see some faces here. Okay, very nice. Okay, so let's start with the title of the shiur is Burning 2020 Calendars, Yosef and Yaakov Reuniting, and Asar B'Teves. So how did this all start? It all started when my colleague, Rabbi Yaakov Glasser, shared the following article with me. In the Wall Street Journal last week, the end of the week, there's an article about people and how they are sort of dealing with everything that's happened this past year in the secular calendar, with New Year's approaching, the end of the year. So people are approaching, are handling the pandemic and everything that's happened this past year in different ways. But there are some people, one woman said, "I'm going to have a big bonfire and I'm going to take my 2020 calendar. Didn't really get much use this year." And as she said, "We're going to very symbolically put the past in the past." And then another family said, "We're going to write letters to 2020." And then after reading them to each other, the family all together, "We're going to burn them. We're going to throw them in the fire." And it's been a year that we're looking forward to saying goodbye to. Okay. So while this, and the article went on, but I think you get the point. While this might seem a bit extreme, taking things and throwing them in the fire and burning them, it seems almost something a little bit more juvenile. It's like when I and some classmates in 7th grade, I think my parents are on here. If you're listening, don't, close your ears for a minute. When we were in 7th grade at the end of the school year, we didn't really have such a great experience. I don't remember which class it was. I guess we were just being kids, whatever, kids will be kids. And we decided to take our workbooks that we'd done the whole year and make a bonfire and burn them. I don't think it's so crazy, but it's whatever. That was what we did. So it's, this might be a bit extreme, burning things, but nonetheless, it demonstrates, and this is where we want to get to. This is part of the introduction. It demonstrates the concept of starting over, of turning a new page, of putting behind us, as they said, put the past in the past. And I think that when reading this article, it reminded me of several things. And this is all part of the introduction. We burn the chametz every year, the leftover chametz before Pesach, the Seor Shebe'isa, the Yetzer Hara, the bad. We burn Nosar when there's a karban that's left over, that the time has passed for when you're allowed to eat it because it became prohibited. And then last week, as Hanukkah ended, so the Shulchan Aruch tells us in Siman Tov Reish Ayin Zayin, Hanoser biyom hashmini min hashemen hasarach lishur hadlaka osalo medur v'sorfa b'tnei atzmo. That if you have leftover oil and wicks from Hanukkah, so you take those and you burn them. Same idea. You're throwing it into this big bonfire. Maybe not a big bonfire, but you throw it away. You burn it so that you don't inadvertently, I think that this is the purpose, you don't inadvertently use it for chol. This is Hanukkah oil and wicks and candles that we elevated, we were Mekadesh, they're holy, and we don't want to then inadvertently use it for the mundane during the year after Hanukkah is ended. But I saw Rav Avram Elimelech Biederman in this past week's Be'er HaParsha. Every week they put together a booklet of his ideas from his shirim. Many of you in Yad Ben Yemin, I know, also get this and read through it every week. Thank you, Menachem Perl, for distributing that and providing that for us every week. So he quotes there a deeper idea from the Siddur Rebbe Shabtai in the name of Mekubalim. And again, this is a deeper idea. I don't fully understand it. But it says that this burning of the leftover Hanukkah wicks and the candle and the oil, it wasn't just to prevent necessarily accidentally using it, but it's on a deeper level. It's meant as a skula to prevent harigas damim, killing of blood. Again, whatever that means. I think essentially what it's saying, though, is that over Hanukkah, you know, this is something on Hanukkah. There was light, there was holiness, it was goodness, inspiration. And whatever's left, this psoles, these dregs, the not so good of this past year, that's what we don't want to take with us moving forward. We want to leave it behind. We want to burn it, and just take the kedusha, the light, that goodness that we have from Hanukkah, and take that with us. And just to end this idea, this introduction, Rav Biederman notes that the Beis Aron, the second Karliner Rebbe, was known to say as he was burning these leftover Hanukkah oil and wicks. This is in Yiddish, as Lana's grandfather used to say in the Jewish. I don't know Yiddish, but I'll read it for you. He says, "Zal verbrennt vern de ganze schlichts fun irische Kinder," which basically means, let all the ra, all the bad of Bnei Israel be burned up. We want to put aside, put behind us this past year, put behind us the bad. Just take the good from Hanukkah, the light from Hanukkah. That's what we want to take with us and move forward. And with that introduction of the calendar burnings, of the Hanukkah candle burnings, so now perhaps we can understand several questions from our Parsha and Asar B'Teves. Okay, so we have in Parsha's Vayigash, Yosef reveals himself to the brothers. There's joy, there's weeping, maybe there's a little bit of guilt, embarrassment, maybe a little bit of fear from the brothers, what's going to happen because of what they did to Yosef. But everything's okay. Yosef tells them, don't worry. The brothers go home to get Yaakov and bring him down to Mitzrayim too. And when they come back from Eretz Yisrael to Mitzrayim with Yaakov, so this is a scene that Yosef probably had dreamt about, had imagined for years and years, 22 years, what would happen, exactly how it would play out, what he would say to his father when he sees him. And he finally comes and he meets his father. Again, 22 years of being gone, right? And what happens? Let me see if I can put this in the chat here so you can read the psukim along with me. Second. It's easier than just sharing my screen because this is the only thing I really want to share with you. Okay, there. Psukim are there in the chat if you want to see it inside. So what does he say? It says in the Psukim, Vayesar Yosef Mer Kavto, Vayalikras Yisrael Aviv, Goshna Ve'er Elav, Vayipol Al Tzavarav, Vayivkal Tzavarav Od. So Yosef, he gets on his chariot, he goes to greet his father, and he shows himself to him, he appears to him, he falls on his neck. It's unclear who's doing that. Vayevkal Tavarav Od. It's also unclear. There's crying going on. Unclear who's crying. Most probably Yosef crying, because Yosef's a crier, as we've seen throughout Vayigash, throughout Miketz. He cries, he goes on and on crying and crying. So it says, Vayevkal Tavarav Od. He cried again. So many Mephorshim say it's Yosef crying here, and Yosef falling on his father's neck. It's a very emotional reunion. Perhaps it was Yaakov crying. The Ramban disagrees with Rashi, and many of Mephorshim says that it was Yaakov crying. Yaakov, who hadn't seen his son for 22 years, who then says in the next pasuk, "Vayimer Yisrael Yosef Amusa Hapam Achrei Rosis Panecha Kiod Chachai." Now I can finally die peacefully. Now I finally got to see your face again. Saveti, I'm satisfied. I've had my fill. Baruch Hashem, all is good. So maybe it was Yaakov crying. Regardless, it definitely was a very emotionally charged reunion, right? The two of them getting together. And what happens next? What would you expect to happen next? The very first thing, they've just had this emotional reunion, the hugging, the crying, the kissing. Oh, I missed you, I missed you, I missed you. And what are the first thing that they would talk about? The first conversation they have that Yaakov and Yosef, probably Yosef, was dreaming about. What does he say? You'd think he would say, you would think Yaakov would say to Yosef, "Yosef, what happened? All those years ago, 22 years ago, I sent you to go check on your brothers. What happened? Where did you go? How did you end up here in Mitzrayim? Why didn't you send a messenger? Why didn't you come and tell me that you were here in Mitzrayim and that you were okay? You're viceroy to Mitzrayim. You're the second in charge. You could have sent somebody. Why didn't you?" Crickets. Nothing. Nothing. Instead, what does Yosef say? Going back to that last pasuk I gave you. Vayomer Yosef el achav vel beis aviv. What does Yosef say? Yosef says, "Oh, you know what? I'm going to go and I'm going to go to Paro and tell him that you came, and I'm going to get you set up and find you a place to live." And that's it. Nothing about what happened. No explanations, no questions. So that's question number one. What's going on there? Question number two. Next week in Vayechi, Yaakov is about to die at the beginning of the Parsha. And it says that Yosef is informed, "Hine avicha chole." Behold, your father is sick. What does it mean that Yosef is informed that his father's sick? Are you telling me that Yosef didn't know his father got sick? Didn't he know? Wasn't he spending time regularly with his father, this father of his that he hadn't seen for 22 years? You think he would spend as much time as he could with him? Okay, maybe he was busy, he was the viceroy, he had a lot going on in Mitzrayim, a famine. But still, even with everything going on, I know people that are very, very busy, they haven't seen their parents. Can you imagine post-corona, God willing, it should come very soon, very, very soon. And family members that haven't been able to come visit us for a year and a half, that we haven't seen for a long time, come. You think, even if we go to work, maybe we can't get away from work, we're still busy, you think that we're not going to spend time with them? Maybe ask them to take us out for dinner? So what was Yosef doing? Where was Yosef? How did he not know that his father was sick? Oh, by the way, Yosef, your father's sick. You might want to go check on him. Wasn't he spending time with his father? What was going on there? So that's question number two. Question number three. So this Friday, as everybody here probably knows, is the fast of Asara B'Teves. So it's a very unusual, it's unusual. It's only fast nowadays that we have on a Friday, right, going into Shabbos. But not only that, There's a fascinating Avudram quoted by the Beis Yosef. The Avudram is a sefer written by Rav David Avudram. He was a 14th century Spanish posek. And he writes that even if Asar B'Teves, Lu Yitzur, that it would fall out on Shabbos, he says we would still fast even though it was Shabbos. The only other fast being like this is, when else do we have a fast that falls out that we fast on Shabbos? Yom Kippur, very good, Yom Kippur. He says, and the reason is because the Pasuk in Yechezkel, talking about the siege, says that the Babylonians began their siege of Yerushalayim Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, in the middle of this day, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. Where else does that phrase come up? That's right. So that's a problem with not having a live audience, is you don't get that feedback of like, where else does it come up? It comes up in the Torah by Parshas Emor, my Bar Mitzvah Parsha. Comes up about Yom Kippur, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. So this phrase indicates the significance of this particular date. And therefore the fast is never delayed. Even Yom Kippur falls out on Shabbos, it's not delayed. And the same thing would be by Asar B'Teves. If it would fall out on Shabbos, Avudram says, it would not be postponed. We would fast on Shabbos. And the Beis Yosef concludes, and he says, I have no idea where the Avudram got this from. I don't know. Now, why is it that even if it was Shabbos, that we would fast Asar B'Teves? What's so unique about this particular day that we would fast like that on Shabbos? Shabbos. So there are a number of explanations and answers given to try and understand this Avudram. But I'd like to focus and share the answer of the Chassam Sofer, who's one of the leading Orthodox rabbis of European Jewry in the first half of the 19th century. And this is brought in the Chassam Sofer's Siddur, in the explanation of the Slichos by Asar B'Teves. And through this answer, I believe that it will not only answer the question about Asar B'Teves, but it also shed light on our other questions and give us perspective as we go into Asar B'Teves, us personally, for our lives and the Tekufa, the period that we find ourselves now, with the beginning of the COVID vaccinations and the middle of the end of the pandemic. So let's take a step back, okay? What happened on Asar B'Teves? So there's a few things that we're commemorating. And again, if you were in the room here, I would ask you, but I mean, if you, does anybody want to, what are we commemorating? Okay, I'll tell you. What? The beginning of the siege. Very good, Sender. Very good. Okay, so that's the most common thing that we're commemorating, is the day that Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians began their siege of Yerushalayim. Very good. There are two other things that happened this day. We won't focus a lot on them. We won't really focus on them at all, but I'll just mention them. Also, Ptolemy, the king of Egypt, ordered the translation of the Bible into Greek, right? The Septuagint, that was on the 8th of Teves in the 3rd century BCE. And we also have the death of Ezra Sofer, which really probably also occurred on the 9th of Teves. It's unclear what happened on the 9th of Teves, but it seems from many commentators that it was the death of Ezra Sofer. Regardless, I should also mention that the chief rabbin of Israel had dedicated this day as the Yom HaKadosh HaKlali, the general day of Kaddish, when it allows the relatives of victims of, let's say, the Holocaust or other yort sites that the date is unknown, could be from other times in Jewish history, to observe a traditional yort site and practices, saying Kaddish, visiting the grave, saying Mishnayos, saying Tehillim. But regardless, as you said, Sender, the main thing that we're commemorating on this day is the siege of Yerushalayim, the beginning of the end. Now, the Sofer writes that there's a fundamental difference, okay, between Asar B'Teves and Tisha B'Av. Well, really, between Asar B'Teves and all the other fasts, but specifically talks about Asar B'Teves and Tisha B'Av. When it comes to fasting for a sad day, for a tragedy from the past, so for example, the yortzeit of a parent, lo aleinu, right? So that fast is not permitted to occur on Shabbos, because Shabbos is a day when we're supposed to have oneg, we're supposed to be joyous, we're supposed to be happy. And if a person would fast for their parents' yortzeit on Shabbos, it would diminish from that joy, because they're reflecting on the past, on the difficult memory of what happened. However, when it comes to a tainis chalom, a tanit chalom, when somebody has an extremely disturbing dream, so the rabbis permitted this person to fast even though it's Shabbos. Why is that? It's because this, by fasting, it brings a person comfort and maybe even joy, knowing that by fasting, it's helping to negate the potential calamity that might happen to them because of this dream, right? If the dream would come true. So it's this future event that hasn't yet occurred, but because their action of fasting could potentially avert the crisis, avert this bad thing from happening, so then they are permitted to fast on Shabbos. So Tisha B'Av is that day, it's a day that we remember, but it's a historical event from the past. It's very sad, probably the saddest day of the year, between the destruction of the base, the temples, Beis HaMikdash, all the other tragedies that occurred on that day. But we can't change history, right? It's in the past. And therefore, if it falls on Shabbos, Tisha B'Av is a nidche, right? We push it off to Sunday. But the Chassam Sofer writes that on Asar B'Teves, that's the day that every single year we're judged in Shemayim, in heaven, and it's decided if Tisha B'Av is going to occur again this year. Just like the original Asar B'Teves, when the siege happened, the judgment was already sealed in Shemayim on that day, 18 months before the temples were destroyed, before the Beis HaMikdash, the first Beis HaMikdash, was destroyed. So every subsequent year after that, and since then, Asar B'Teves and Tisha B'Av are eternally linked, because the judgment from Shemayim is taking place on Asar B'Teves to determine whether this year we're going to once again mourn on Tisha B'Av and, so to speak, have the Beis HaMikdash re-destroyed once again, or if it will be rebuilt. So that's why, in theory, if Asar B'Teves falls out on Shabbos, we would still fast. This is explaining the Avudram now, because it's like that bad dream, which is alerting us not to dwell on the past, right? What happened in the past is past, but it's telling us to look ahead to the future, and that we control our destiny. We, if we're worthy, we can potentially receive a good judgment and avert the crisis of yet another Tisha B'Av. So now, with that understanding of Asar B'Teves as a fast directing us to look to the future, forward-facing, so now we can go back to our Parsha and answer the questions. So why was it that Yaakov and Yosef didn't discuss what had happened with the Mechira, with the brothers, so many years ago, and how he disappeared and how he never wrote home? You know why? It's in the past. It's water under the bridge. What happened, happened. It's history. So now we're going to start a new page. We're going to turn the calendar over to 2021. Although in Jewish calendar, we're still in the middle of Tavshin Pei Aleph. But we're starting a new page in the family of Yaakov in our Parsha right now. So Yosef and Yaakov say to themselves, you know what? Let's look to the future. Let's start clean. Doesn't matter what happened. And that, perhaps that's why Yosef says, what did he say in that last pasuk? He says to his brothers and to Yaakov, I'm going to go right now to Paro and I'm going to find you a place to live. I'm going to get you settled. What was he saying? He's saying, maybe this is what he was doing. He's saying, I'm going to do what I can to keep the Jewish people united. No more of this machlokes between the brothers. I'm going to get you your own area of land so you don't assimilate, so that you stay united as the Jewish people. Let me go right away now to Paro and make sure that that happens. What happened in Vayechi? How could it be that Yosef didn't know that his father was sick, that he had to be informed? Hinei avicha choleh. The Midrash Psikta Rabasi says, you know why? Because Yosef was afraid that if he spent more time with his father, that his father would, eventually it would come up, his father Yaakov would say, and by the way, Yosef, you know all those years ago, 22 years ago, I sent you to go check on your brothers, and whatever happened over there. And Yosef was afraid that Yaakov would bring that up, and that he would be forced to answer and tell him what happened. And if he did that, then Yaakov would end up cursing the brothers for what they did. And he didn't want that to happen. Because Yosef had already assessed the brother's sincerity and tshuva and said to himself, let's move forward. And therefore, the rest of Yaakov's life, Yosef avoided him as much as possible so that that question wouldn't come up. He didn't want to live in the past. He wanted to only look to the future. And by the way, the Ramban notes that Yaakov likely never ended up knowing 100% what happened and about the Mechiras Yosef. I'm sure he had his suspicions, but according to the Ramban, he never knew 100%. But that was the way of our Avos, of the forefathers, not to dwell on the past, but rather to look to the future. Doesn't matter what happened, what may have happened in our lives, what may have happened in the past year. Crazy, unprecedented. Let's look to the future. My colleague, Rabbi Stephen Miedelnik, who's the rabbi in Avos Achim in Highland Park, New Jersey, so he pointed out to me that we see looking in the future instead of dwelling on the past is really built into our DNA. After Yosef, also in our Parsha, after Yosef revealed himself to his brothers and he embraces Binyamin, his only full brother from Rachel, right? All the other brothers were half-brothers. He cries, and it says he cries, Binyamin cried. So what was it that they were crying about? It's not the reunion now, tears of joy. It's not about everything that had happened in the past. What does Rashi tell us they were crying about? Rashi says, Al shnei mikdashot she'asin liyos bechalko shel Binyamin v'sofan licharev. Yosef was crying about the two temples that would ultimately be built in the portion of Binyamin that would be destroyed in the future. And what was Binyamin crying about? Al mishkan shilo she'asin liyos bechalko shel Yosef v'sofan licharev. Binyamin was crying about the tabernacle in Shiloh before the Beis HaMikdash was built, which was in the portion of Yosef and would ultimately be destroyed in the future. They were crying about what would happen in the future. And when Yaakov met Rachel for the first time a few weeks ago in Parshas Vayetze, it says that he cried. And again, what was he crying about? It wasn't because of what had happened in the past, that his brother Esav was chasing after him to kill him, and that he had nothing to give his bashert. He had no money. He had the clothes on his back, and that was it. No. What was he crying about? Rashi says, "Lefi she'safa bruach akor she'ena nichneses imo lekvura." He was crying about the fact that Rachel Imenu, his soulmate, would not be buried together with him in Marat HaMachpelah. He was crying about the future. And one last example, what do we say to Bris Mila? Right after the Bris is done, Kishem Shinichnas LeBris, Kein Nikanes LeTorah, LeChuppa, Ulamasim Tovim. The baby's still in diapers, barely 8 days old. And we're already talking about getting him married? Yes. Because we must always be looking ahead to the future. Let me just end with a story. I think ties this all together. Second. Aaron Rokeach, who is the fourth Belzer Rebbe, grew up in Europe, and during the Holocaust, he became a target of the Nazis. You know, the U.S. Army has their card deck of, like, people that they're after, Lahavdil, of Osama bin Laden was I don't know, whatever, the ace or the king or whatever. So the Belzer Rebbe was it was on their hit list there. They were really out to get him. And together with his half-brother Rav Mordechai, in a really crazy story, narrowly escapes roundups and deportations multiple times in the ghettos. They dress up as Russian generals who were prisoners of war to get over and end up in Hungary for several months. And eventually, through a harrowing journey, they end up taking a train, getting to Eretz Yisrael, and are in Haifa, February 1944. And his very first Shabbos in Israel was Shabbos Shira, Parshas Baaloscha, Parshas Bishalach. And he gathers there with some of the Hasidim that had also escaped and were in Eretz Yisrael, and they get together Friday night for a tish. And at that tish, he shared the following idea. He said, is Parshas Bishalach, right? So he says, after Kriyas Yamsuf, the splitting of the sea, and the end of their enemy, Moshe now leads the Jewish people in song, Az Yashir Moshe Uvnei Yisrael. What does that mean? Then Moshe will sing, Yashir, will sing in the future. Why would this song only be sung in the future? Why not now? They just experienced a miracle. So Rashi says, it's because they'll sing in the future, it's referring to Tchiyas HaMesim. That when the miracle in the future of all those that have passed away will come back to life. So then, in the future, Yashir, we will sing, Yashir, he will sing, Moshe will lead us in song and praise of Hashem for that miracle of Tchiyas HaMesim. The Belzer Rebbe looks around the room and he says to them, but it was this generation that had experienced the miracles and redemption from Egypt and the splitting of the sea. They're the ones that are obligated to praise Hashem. They're the ones that should be singing. Not waiting for the future. And the Belzer Rebbe answered that during the plague of Choshech, the plague of darkness, a plague that they had back then, Chazal tell us that 80% of the Jews died in Egypt during that plague. Right? V'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim, which Rashi says, Chazal say, it means that only 1/5 of the Jewish people came out. That means that millions and millions of Jews perished, died, were killed during that plague of darkness. And every single one of those 20% of Jews that came out and survived had a friend or relative or a neighbor that they knew personally, probably, that had perished in the plague. How could they sing songs of praise to Hashem when there was so much sadness and depression and despair about what had happened to all those Jews. Jews that they knew personally. That's why Moshe told them, don't worry. A time will come in the future when we'll all be reunited with those who perished. And that's why we can sing praises now on our survival, on these miracles. And the Rebbe continued, we who've made it to Eretz Yisrael, we too survived the slaughter from the Nazis. But every single one of us had family and friends and neighbors and leaders and rabbanim that were killed and lost in the Holocaust. But you know what? One day in the future, we too will be reunited with them through Tchiyas HaMesim, and just like the Jews at the sea, at the Kriyas Yamsuf, were able to sing, so too we can also now sing praises to Hashem. And then they, you know, did what they do at a Titian, sang, gave out Shirayim. Looking ahead to the future, we, all of us, we are the deciders of our destiny. We can determine if this coming year the Beis HaMikdash will once again be destroyed or if it will be rebuilt. We can determine how the rest of our Tav Shin Pei Aleph turns out. But like Yosef and Yaakov, we shouldn't dwell on the past, on the Chorban that was, a memorial of something in history. Maybe burning our 2020 calendars is a little extreme. But regardless, perhaps it's the right perspective. We should be forward facing to what we can still control. We can start a new page. We can start a new calendar. The beginning of the vaccination definitely brings hope. Hope for the future. And we can continue to daven that all the shluchim of Hashem, the vaccine, the doctors, other healthcare workers, our leaders, that they all guide us out of this dark, dark, dark year into a new world where not only will we be hopefully once again be able to get together in person with our family, maybe even as soon as the Seder Bezrat Hashem this year. I saw just today that that's what they're hoping, at least in Eretz Yisrael. But that we'd be able to daven again together in shul, dance, holding hands. If you even think about that, holding hands, dancing, like touching other people. Walking around without masks. Okay, that might be a little bit longer, but still. All of this seems so foreign after almost a year of this plague of darkness that we've had. But hopefully we will once again also have a future. A future where this Tisha B'Av, we're able to not mourn, not sit on the floor mourning, but celebrate with the rebuilt Beis HaMikdash. Thank you, everybody, for joining. Thank you for encouraging me and wishing everybody an easy and meaningful fast, a healthy winter, and a good Shabbos.